Morning. Welcome, everybody. On this sunny Monday morning, we have a couple of bills before us today. Just as notes to the agenda, we will be reversing the order of public hearings today, taking up House Bill 2423 first and then going to House Bill 2394. Also, we have some bill introduction that we will... Never mind.
You'll be happy to start over.
Do I want to say something?
Still not on. Huh?
It wasn't like this in Independence Hall.
No, Mr. Madison just scribbled like crazy.
We are set? We're all set. Okay. Well, once again, just in case we weren't on the record, I'll welcome everybody this morning to the House Judiciary Committee meeting. And note that we have two bills up for hearing today, 2394 and 2423. We will take those in reverse order. We also have some bill introductions that we will catch at the end of this morning's session. And I see that the agenda also was posted for public comment just on general testimony, inviting parties to make known ideas on revenue options. Is anyone here to testify for that general purpose this morning? Okay, then we will see. We'll check on that and see how we are at the end of the meeting. My intention would be to defer public comment until our 3 o'clock meeting today or until our 6 o'clock meeting today. So, committee members, we have a joint meeting at 3 o'clock with Senate and another joint meeting at 6 o'clock with Senate to receive public comment on revenue options. I'll check in at the end of the meeting just in case anybody having seen the posting comes in and wants to talk to us about that. But otherwise, my intention would be to defer that until this afternoon and this evening. So, with that said, let's begin with a public hearing on House Bill 2423. Steve, do you want to give us the overview on that, and then we'll bring up some testimony.
Members, House Bill 2423, you have the bill. You also have a -1 amendment, which essentially is the bill plus some additional information. So it, in effect, replaces the bill. The bill itself deals with the annual audits for school districts, and it changes who's responsible for seeing that those audits are done. Currently, it's the school district, but the bill would make the Secretary of State responsible for contracting out the audits for the school districts. And then it sets up a advice committee having 4 or 5 members to make recommendations for that process. The amendment adds to the Secretary of State doing the being responsible for their financial audit, also doing a performance audit, allows the Secretary of State to spend up to $500,000 out of the state school fund for the cost of those performance audits.
Okay. Representative Hans, do you want to speak on this before we bring up our witnesses?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, it was my intention to replace the entire bill with this amendment. The goal of this bill, if it's amended, is to add more accountability to our education system. The state's audits division has established a strong record of uncovering ways to make our state agencies more efficient. And I think this bill just simply provides a method for those auditors to begin looking at Oregon school districts as well. We've seen in recent months how an audit can prompt changes in an agency direction. Last year's audit of the Oregon Lottery, I think, is a good example. It found hundreds of thousands of dollars in questionable spending, and the result has been that new systems are now in place, new people are now in place, and I talked to one of the auditors involved in that last week who said that already the savings at the lottery have probably paid for the cost of that audit. Another recent audit that we saw in this committee looked at our educational system statewide and found, among other things, that Oregon spends slightly more student than other states and recommended ways to make our overall system more efficient. Audits like this are known as performance audits, obviously, because they measure things like the mission of an agency, legislative intent, and other variables besides just making sure that all the numbers add up. And while auditors, as I understand, currently have the authority to audit school districts, they don't have the money, and this measure makes a small down payment on this investment from this school fund. I think our schools and taxpayers will be better served by these performance audits, and I'm certainly not implying that school districts have the kind of spending problems, for example, we saw at the lottery, but this is certainly one way to make sure. Until that audit last year, many people in state government assumed the lottery was one of our best-run agencies. Governor Kulongoski has set a tone for making government more accountable and efficient, and I think he's right when he says we have to regain the confidence of Oregonians before we ask for more money. I think this amendment reflects that sentiment by seeking accountability and efficiency from our schools. Committee members, I've sent out, there are a number of editorials on the lottery audit, but at the bottom of this one, as you see from the Salem Statesman Journal, it says, put future lottery savings to good use, hire more state auditors. Again, making the point that when people take a second look at systems and controls, that oftentimes they can recommend changes. And I think the audits division has proven over and over that it can, that these audits actually pay for themselves in spades. And so that's what I would like to do to go beyond state agencies with these audits and into school districts. It's certainly not my intent to change or depart from the current traditional way that schools are audited by their own financial accountants now. But I just see this as an accountability issue and an efficiency issue. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. Representative Butler, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Tom Butler. Tom Butler from House District 60, Southeastern Oregon. Continuing to wear my beef hat, I continue to have a beef. I've got 500,000 of them, and somebody needs to be eating them. At the receptions that we continue to attend, I'm recognizing that we're eating more and more of the endangered species salmon, and I think that it's probably high time that we recognize the folks in Southeastern Oregon that put their money where their mouth is and eat more beef. Also, I have some concerns, and that's why I continue to wear my beef hat about rural Oregon's issues with jobs as we pull out state jobs from rural Oregon. Colleagues, I'm here again and again. This is the third time relative to the issues, and I'm not prepared to address most of the performance issues that Representative Hass has discussed this morning relative to moving some money over to the performance end of the audits. However, I will say this, that right now we're examining the Secretary of State's office, and 2 years ago when we had for the first time kind of a brand new opportunity to hear from the folks from the Lottery Commission and General Government Ways and Means, we recognized then that there, some things in the agency were not passing the smell test and encouraged a performance audit to go on. So I submit to you that it isn't Secretary of State's office that brings up these issues on their own, that other agencies, when they have an opportunity to get behind some of the numbers, and we were questioning at that time issues relative to not just compensation but also travel and those issues, and I think that's what's brought up some of the issues. So I wouldn't lend too much credence to the issue that Secretary of State's office on their own motion has done a performance audit which has discovered all. I want to note this bill is concerning to the CPAs in the state of Oregon, that the accounting profession as auditors are licensed by the Board of Accountancy, and that we have a very strict performance code relative to the audits themselves. Not every CPA in the state of Oregon can do a municipal audit. Those are required, a special ticket is required for these municipal audits. And it's a very school districts have to go out and seek for those folks who have those special audit, municipal audit certificates. So the very first standard of field auditing is that you must be competent to begin the process for which you're being engaged. And the Secretary of State's audit division spent last year 16,500 hours approximately in last landing in extraordinary audits outside the ordinary course of what is mandated as the Secretary of State. That's the equivalent of about 43 full-time auditors within the state that are doing work that I have a question that they are whether or not they are truly competent. And that's been brought up to the Secretary of State in the General Government Subcommittee hearing. We're concerned that a great deal of money is being expended in audit areas that does not need to be expended on. As I said, accountants, the CPAs, and the state adhere to a strict code of conduct in auditing all educational districts, and particularly those with our school districts. Local auditors have proven in the past to be good auditors. There have been no problems that we're aware of that have created serious conflicts here. This appears to be a solution in search of a problem. This bill does not generate performance audits for the school districts without an additional cost. And that additional cost, I'm concerned, the more that we move towards the state resolving local problems, the more we lose control of the local district. Those same local school districts have commissioned in the past some performance audits, and always with every financial audit comes a management advisory letter. And if those school districts will adhere to the management advisory letters, those are the areas in which the school districts can and do, as they pursue those issues, many times find areas of improvement which they can make within their local bureaucracy. This is not an economically efficient way to audit. It's very difficult. Certainly, we recognize that the cadre of auditors that are presently here in Salem could go out and do the local schools, but at what cost? Not just the loss of local control, but also the additional funds that are expended through the Secretary of State's office in order to provide these. And I submit to you that we can continue to address those issues locally for a much better price and for with the local auditors who recognize the problems locally. Finally, the passage of House Bill 2423 would require establishing a bureaucracy which is costly beyond imagination. At this particular point, I believe that it will produce little, if any, savings for education and could, in effect, create a great deal of additional bureaucracy. So, colleagues, after three sessions, I continue to stand in opposition to moving the state auditor back into our school rooms. I think this is Colonel Sanders attempting to take over the chicken coop.
Questions for Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair.
The Representative has.
Thank you, Representative. You know, this isn't the bill that you have proposed in the past two sessions. There is no intent here to replace the CPAs under this here. This amendment is vastly different and would create a new bureaucracy. I know you are a CPA, and I understand you want to protect those interests. But this bill is much different in terms of the amendment from legislation that you opposed in the past.
President Vance, you're referring to the -1 amendment to replace the bill?
Yeah. Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hass, I have not had an opportunity to go through thoroughly the -1 amendments. However, I would say this, to the extent that it starts to set up an account where the state will do the performance audits for local districts, I think that's a giant step backwards in the wrong direction. I would say further, relative to the fact that the certified public accountants in the state are somehow protected by having this kind of legislation, I call to your attention that, in fact, the folks that are already conducting the audits are certified public accountants, and I have never, even though I am a member of that profession, I have never conducted a municipal audit, nor do I ever desire to conduct such a municipal audit, because the requirements, the education requirements and the additional licensure required by the State Board of Certified Public Accountants is very onerous, and the additional continuing education is very, very important. And I'm not certain that the folks that have been coming out and doing the performance audit within the various state agencies have those kinds of credentials. And thus, I don't know that without a great deal of oversight, directs those folks to go out and get additional training and so forth locally at the state level, which I'm not convinced really circumvents. It creates a greater bureaucracy is what it does. And it does not add to any of the solutions. It subtracts from them because the dollars are dear and precious.
Well let me just, if I can, clarify my understanding of the -1s again that we're seeing this morning. And we're not in work session, but we'll direct our attention to those since Representative Hansen's intention to replace those with the bill, replace the bill with these. This, the -1 amendment, Steve, as I see them, leave in place the financial audit, the current statutes relating to financial audits by CPAs and school districts. This creates a $500,000 authorization within the school fund for the Secretary of State to conduct performance and program audits, and also authorizes the Joint Legislative Audit Committee to oversee performance and program audits. But otherwise, those that's separate entirely from the fiscal audits that are currently, and those would not be that process would not be changed by the Dash One amendments.
That's the way I read the amendment too.
And Mr. Chair, again, my opposition would be to the extent that you're creating a new agency, a new bureaucracy to go in and perform the performance audits, to be able to conduct those performance audits. What you've done is you've taken the scant resources from the education community, moved those into a different bureaucracy, even a starting fund of $500,000, moves that away from the local districts and moves it to a state-supervised program, a state-supervised bureaucracy, which I personally believe is the wrong direction for us to go, because the folks in Salem may or may not know about the concerns that we have for our school districts in Canby and Dallas and the other portions of the state of Oregon and rural Oregon. And that's the concern that I have, is that the folks locally are best able to address those concerns and issues.
Any other questions, Representative Butler?
Mr. Chair, I just would comment, and I appreciate you coming forward with these concerns, Representative. I think, actually, an independent voice, independent from the school districts, is exactly how you find accountability and efficiency. You can make that same argument and advance that same theory that the people didn't understand the concerns that the lottery or the issues that the lottery has to deal with, yet they were independent and outside, far enough removed from that agency where they did find those items that have now been corrected. And I think you can make that very same argument about accountability when it goes to have, when it says, when somebody puts an outside look into a school district, and I just respectfully disagree that this is a step backwards. I think this is a step forward, and that we're not going to do business as usual. And this is a separate line here. It's an outside auditor looking in here with no conflicts whatsoever. And I respectfully disagree.
Mr. Chair, if I can address, any auditor that takes a position that he is less than independent when he starts out on an audit for a school district anywhere in the state of Oregon, if that auditor accepts that engagement and is not 100% fully and totally independent from the commencement of that audit, will suffer the revocation of his licensure and or other serious consequences. So to say that somehow that we're going to bring in someone that is independent, that indicates and implies that somehow the folks that are there on the ground right now, just because they happen to be selected from an audit or from a RFP process from within an area of maybe 100 or 200 miles distant, it means that they are not independent, I think begs the question that is, and probably defames the profession beyond what I could really just sit here and accept. So those auditors, if they are not independent, have no business being in the school district, and there's never been an indication that that we're getting, at this particular point, accountants that aren't independent because they have to pass that test before they can even bid on the process.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Butler, perhaps you can help me to understand some of what the controversy here is about. As I understand what typically happens in Oregon school districts today, it is that a financial audit is conducted on an annual basis with a report back to the school board and then filed with the county and perhaps other places as well. Is that a rough equivalent to your understanding?
Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, and members of the committee and Representative Warner, yes, right now there is a financial audit which is conducted annually on school districts, and that financial audit also has with it a management letter which addresses some of the potential areas that if the school board would like to seek those areas out, they should be able to address issues of performance, but it is not a performance audit.
Okay, and we'll follow up if I may. Now, as a member of a school board, I received a number of those management letters, so I know at least in general terms what you were talking about, and those included things like where you store your computer backup tapes and things like that. And, of course, those were important items in case you had a fire, but they certainly weren't performance audits. Can you give us a little bit of an idea of what's the difference between that management letter and what a full performance audit would be like?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnard, that's a great question, and I think it's self-answering in part. That auditor who has performed the financial audit is probably in a key position to continue the scope of his engagement, his or her engagement, to include portions of a performance audit because they are already on the ground. The concerns are not just where the tapes are stored or whether or not you're making those kinds of backups, but a performance audit will then look at, is this reasonable in relationship to what other school districts may be doing? And many times the engagement letters, those management engagement letters, will call those issues to the attention of the school board that they are not controlling those kinds of overhead and operational expenses as they should be.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Williams.
Representative Butler, I guess I'm, having had a little bit of experience at times with audits, I am struck by the difference, and perhaps this is what my colleague Representative Barnhart was getting to, the difference between the kind of audit that is traditionally done is one sits as a board member, for example, for either a school district or any other institution, and the kind of audit that, for example, Representative Haas was indicating was done for the lottery by the Secretary of State's office, which was really more of an evaluation of whether the dollars which the lottery had for purposes of spending were being spent appropriately given their overall mission to try to, you know, net as much of that revenue back to the state for the various purposes that the lottery is there for. And I don't get the sense that typically when a school district hires an auditor to do an audit that they're actually hiring them to come in and then be, you know, critical of the policy choices that are made about some of the money. I think typically what happens is they come back and they say whether or not, you know, they're meeting generally accepted accounting practices, whether or not the monies are actually where they say they are, and all the rest of that stuff. But it is back to that, you know, more broadly defined issue of whether or not the dollars are being appropriately spended. And for example, I wouldn't traditionally, I think, see a standard financial audit of a district suggesting that, you know, if the school board had, you know, paid for a very expensive meeting room to have an off-site 3-day retreat and all the food came from that there would necessarily be a comment about that in the audit. The fact that it was done might be noted in some of the accounting records, but there wouldn't be sort of that critical, was this really a good use of the public's money kind of questioning. And I think that's the thing that maybe this effort is trying to get to, and I wonder if you have a response to that general issue.
Representative Representative Williams, certainly the scope of a financial audit is different than the scope of a performance audit. And while the auditor is examining the financial records of a school, they don't just tell you that the money was expended. They will tell you that the money was expended in accordance with the federal and state guidelines. And that's why the continuing professional education for a municipal auditor is so exhaustive and so much greater than that of any other auditors that perform public audits within the state of Oregon. The scope of those audits must indicate that they have expended those funds in accordance with federal guidelines and those kinds of things. If that means that the school board could be educated in Portland versus Orlando for certain school board issues and the training that's necessary, the auditor will examine the fact that, in fact, the money was expended for the training, but will not tell you that the training appears to be in any way lavish or that meals were provided only within the scope and the nature of that training itself. But I think that basically is an issue that if we ask the auditor if there were efficiencies and the scope of those audits could be expanded to touch on those kinds of performance issues while the auditor is present, as opposed to bringing in a brand new auditor who is going to have to start from scratch and commence that audit process, perhaps what should be done is that funds could be provided to provide an additional portion of the scope, and that certainly would be within the purview of the legislature to do that, so that the local auditors could go ahead and address a certain additional group of issues that the legislature would have some desire to know if meals beyond X number of dollars. Now, those meals will not exceed The federal guideline for meals, the auditor will be examining that. They will not be outside the scope and the nature of the course and the training that's necessary. But if the legislature wanted to put an additional mandate on schools to have the auditors bring back an additional portion of a performance measure that's addressed in that process, certainly that would be within the purview of the legislature. But I don't believe that it should be directed from Salem auditors who are new when they arrive in the school district to perform those performance measures.
I think the, and we'll wrap up your testimony, you know, you must have a committee this morning. Just, you know, my observation, though, I think I've seen this bill before, and or at least efforts in this direction, and it's generally impetus behind this, I think, is that as the state has assumed the lion's share of the funding responsibility for schools, then shouldn't some audit responsibility flow back the other way? That is, shouldn't the state have the responsibility of looking at the expenditure of those funds over and above what has been the traditional district level financial audit? And I guess if you look at this, if you were to look at this as an extension of an audit of state dollars going out of the general fund, isn't this more like what the Secretary of State does in the way of auditing state agencies that we fund? I mean, I don't think anyone would suggest that we abolish the auditing function of the Secretary of State and just have agencies hire their own auditors and to do their. So where do you see the line between, given that the state has gone to spend 70% or so of funding for local schools, where do you see the line between the way the state approaches its audit responsibility for agencies and its audit responsibility for school districts?
Mr. Chair, that's an excellent question. At present, the Constitution provides right. that the Secretary of State will audit the agencies of the state, and those are to be done on a periodic basis. And so far as we're able to determine in our examination of the Audits Division of the Secretary of State's office, they're in compliance with their constitutional mandate. The concern as to where that line is drawn, there are a group of optional audits which are in process at all times of the state's Secretary of State's existence during the last biennium. We've determined that there's about 16,500 hours that are being expended, which is the equivalent of about 43 auditors, on optional issues that are outside the constitutional mandate and mission of the Secretary of State. The question that we have, and it has been asked by a member of the committee and expresses concern over the issue, are these folks within the Secretary of State's direction, are they technically competent to start in on the performance audits? That's something that we have not gotten to. And the concern that we have is that if the Secretary of State is going to expand and through legislative directive and the budget availability of budgeted funds, expand the scope of those audits out into performance, then is it within the legislature's purview to direct the Secretary of State to continue to go now to the school districts for the first time? Or should the state legislature, if it wants to have that continued funding opportunity and the process of evaluating the use of the funds, should the state then go ahead and have an audit mandate which says, in addition to telling us that your audit of the school district is that financially they're in compliance with all of the federal and state mandates that are presently directed of school districts, if the state legislature wanted to go ahead and request that the auditors, while they are on site, those independent auditors, perform additional performance measurements and say, we want to know if there are efficiencies that the accountants, those independent auditors, could implement with regard to traveling, with regard to telephones, with regard to those kinds of things. Those are things which your independent local auditors may have a pretty good idea about. However, usually those folks are members of the communities, and they're taxpayers. And they're going to be calling that to the attention to the board and the board members within their management letter, and if not within the management letter, at a school board that they'll be attending shortly to come to pass.
Okay. All right. We should move on. Let Representative Butler get back to his committee. Thank you very much for stopping in this morning.
Thank you.
Let's bring up Chuck Hibner and Phil Hopkins.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning. You bet.
hopefully
his attention.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Chuck Hibner. I am the Deputy Director of the Audits Division, responsible for the performance audits and the IT functions of our office. With me today is Bill Hopkins. He's our audit manager with responsibilities for our municipal audit function, so he'll be happy to handle any questions you may have regarding the existence of our that function in our office. I'm here on behalf of our office today to offer our comment on the proposed amendments to HB House Bill 2423. Mr. Chair, we love to audit. In the committee's and the legislature's opinion, K-12 spending is an area that is deserving of additional performance audit resources. We'd be happy to oblige. As the state share of K-12 education has increased, our office has already made a concerted effort to do more performance-related work in this area, specifically relative to the Department of Education's oversight of K-12 spending. To date, we have released audit reports on public school infrastructure, which included opportunities to improve planning and funding, and the database initiative project within the department there, as well as a recently completed high-level cost survey of K-12 spending by district statewide. We were calling that phase one, because phase two will involve the drill-down process of getting behind those higher-level numbers and finding out what makes up those costs. We also have a performance audit underway of the department's oversight of English as a second language and special education programs. To summarize, however, all of our audit work to date has been devoted to the higher level Department of Education's oversight of K-12 spending and not to the auditing of discrete school districts as this bill as amended would propose, is to my understanding. We strongly feel that operations and expenditures reviews of operations and expenditures from an economy and efficiency as well as a compliance point of view can yield some significant benefits. This can be exampled by a recently concluded performance audit at the state lottery, as pointed out earlier, and also by our recent review of the contracting practices of the Department of Human Services, where we similarly noted changes that could be made to their processes that would better detect and prevent unnecessary or unwanted expenditures. This can also be seen by some work that's been performed by other states. I passed out a review from the state of Florida. Florida has been doing performance audits of school districts since the mid-1990s. In this recent report, they assert that over this time period, their recommendations have identified $2.1 billion in long-term school district savings. Obviously, the magnitude of savings that we would identify in Oregon would not approach those realized by a state the size of Florida, but I would suspect the character of such findings would be similar. More generally, our experience with performance audits has shown that this work returns to the state in a proportion of approximately 6-1. For every $1 spent on a performance audit, we generally identify $6 in questionable or recoverable expenditures. The second thing that this bill does is it specifies how district-specific performance audits are to be paid for. Whereas the 1999 Department of Justice opinion affirmed that the Secretary of State has the authority to audit school districts, it also made it clear that this work would need to be paid for by individual school districts. This bill, as amended, would allow for payment of these audits out of the school fund prior to distribution. I'm more than happy to answer any questions specific to the amendments, or Mr. Hopkins is here to handle anything in regard to the municipal audit program.
Representative Hopkins, let's go down to this end.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions if you would indulge me.
You may.
How often and when was the last time that the lottery was audited prior to this audit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, it's audited annually in terms of the financial statement audits. When we start looking at performance audit issues, this probably, unless you count the information technology audit, which was done last year as well, was the first time we've really looked at the administrative expenditures part of the state lottery.
Could you tell me, Mr. Chair, could I clarify? What we're talking about here now has nothing to do with the fiscal audits that schools currently use.
I don't know if I would go as far as saying nothing to do, but it is a different focus. Do you want to distinguish?
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson. There is a fiscal tie. The financial audits are opining on the financial statements as a whole, and of course pointing out any control sort of findings that may be identified during that audit. The performance or the program audit is audits as represented in the amendment, as I understand what is desired by the committee, would be looking at more of the service delivery sort of issues. Are the services being delivered according to plan? Are they being delivered in an effective, efficient, and economical manner? And our ability to identify those issues and recommendations relative to that typically would have a fairly significant impact if indeed the issues are present.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
So if I'm understanding correctly, would this eliminate one of the audits because the Secretary of State's office would encompass two because of that connection, or would the school districts be faced with two audits, the one they currently do plus a new one?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, there would be two audits. They would still have the requirement to do the fiscal audit, and then to the extent practicable, we would be tasked to do some sort of performance or program audit, not necessarily, as I understand the bill, on an annual basis, but on a risk-based or a rotating basis or whatever seems to make sense.
Yeah, that's a good point. This would not be an annual every district performance audit done by the Secretary of State, especially with funding at $500,000. I think it would be very much kind of a spot check, whether risk-based or whether some element of randomness. I'm not sure, but it would just be, if you're a district, it'd probably be, once in 20 years that you might be audited.
Mr. Chair, that, it'd be difficult to determine that. We did some back-of-the-napkin sort of calculations that at the $500,000 level, that probably would equate to four auditors, audit positions, full-time throughout the biennium. So how many districts they'd be able to get to during that time period would vary, depending upon the size of the district.
One final thank you, Mr. Chair. And is it your belief that the Secretary of State's office staff would be adequately trained to evaluate and do an audit on school district mission and accountability for those kinds of things?
Mr. Chair, Representative House, without a doubt. I have no doubt whatsoever.
Representative Berger, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Butler indicated that he believes that a lot of these functions in terms of performance could be already in place by strengthening the management letter and the audits that are already annually indicated or actually required. Why or why not would that work? What's the fundamental difference between this financial audit and the performance audit function? That why couldn't the CPAs who are on the ground do this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, you're asking the auditor to look at more of an operational component of the business, and it certainly would be very possible that the local CPAs would be able to present that sort of expertise to an auditor of that nature. The performance auditor operational audits is something we do regularly. As the representative stated, we devote a significant amount of audit hours to that every year. In fact, if we could devote more, we would. We think it's a very high impact area for our business. Whether or not the independent, the local CPAs would have the time or the desire to bring those operational aspects of the business for comparative purposes would be up to them, I suppose.
Follow up. If a school district desired that in their audit, could they ask their local CPA or whoever is doing their financial audits to bring that as part of the audit, and would it cost more, or would it be part of the standard management practice?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, I'm not sure I completely know the answer to that, because it would depend upon the extent of the work that was being asked for and in terms of how it relates to state funds and our requirements to be the auditors of state funds. I don't know how that would overlap and play into any outside requests for a performance audit that isn't specifically or explicitly stated like the Municipal Audit Act is. I'm not sure how that will all play together. But on the other half of your question is whether it costs more. I would expect that that with additional audit hours, there would be additional costs no matter who was performing the work, be it the local CPA or ourselves.
All right. Other questions? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a couple of things. You mentioned in your testimony the Secretary of State's audit obligation as it currently exists, and that school districts would have to pay for a performance audit out of their own funds with the Secretary of State to conduct one today. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bonner, that would be correct. That's our understanding of the opinion from the Department of Justice that we got, that since the work we would be doing would be specific to the school district, that whoever is the focus of the audit would need to be paying for those audit costs.
To follow up on that point, if I could. Now, does the Secretary of State have the authority today to go into a school district and say, we're going to do a performance audit and then we're going to send you a bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnard, I believe so.
Okay. Second topic, if I could. I'm still confused about the definition of a performance audit. And let me sort of describe a little bit to sort of get you an idea of what my confusion is. I've always thought that you, in order to be a good educator, you need to know something about best practices in education. You've got to know something about curriculum. You've got to know a little bit about the way schools generally are organized and what tends to work best in a school context, which might be very different from the lottery or municipal government or something else. And I'm curious about the statement you made earlier that absolutely your people are prepared to do performance audit of schools. Can you jive those two sets of ideas for me so that I understand better what a performance audit is in this context?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnard, my belief is that our folks, since they do this regularly, have to go into different types of agencies and really learn the business and learn the sort of aspects of the business that you were talking about, that they would, and especially since we're working now with the Department of Education on so much and some of the work that we're doing now, we have a fairly good feel for kind of the mission and the goals of education statewide, and we certainly use that as a guide as to where we think we need to devote audit resources. At the local level, of course, there's going to be other operational sort of issues that will need to be learned and understood. And as you said, as an administrator in any of these sort of organizations, you have to learn what works and what doesn't. And that's exactly what the auditor would be in a position of needing to do from a broader operational point of view, is to go into these local school districts, learn those things, understand those best practices, either from the school districts itself, other school districts within the state that are similar, maybe go to other states as to what they're looking at in terms of both things they're auditing now and maybe best practices in other states. And our folks have practice doing that. They know how to go out and get the information and put it together in a way that allows us to apply a relevant criteria to whatever operational aspect we're trying to look at.
Okay. Final question, yeah. If I could, mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, in this area. So there's some ramp-up time to get auditors educated, as it were, about education. How much is it going to take to do that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bonnard, it can vary with whatever the program is. Of course, more sophisticated the program, the more time it will take. Typically, in a performance audit where we're going into a new agency, really in any audit engagement, you're probably learning from the time you begin to the time you end. But in terms of getting a general sense for the sort of issues you're going to want to look at and the comparative basis for doing your audit work, the front end of any audit is a 6 to 8 week survey period where we will determine what it is that is important to look at in the aspect and accumulating the criteria. And then as you start to do the more drilled down audit work, you'll be constantly bringing in both the sort of things that you're finding as well as any additional criteria you may be culling. So during the 3 to 4 month audit, you may be pulling in criteria or learning things, especially because we're working closely with the agencies throughout the entire engagement. But the primary learning component happens on the front end of the audit within the first 8 to 10 weeks, and then we're just as refined as you move forward.
Mr.
Representative,
thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know in Tillamook our audit cost about $20,000 a year, and I would assume that Portland's was commensurately comparable to that. Do you have any idea how much an audit such as you're describing would cost a school district?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, it would probably depend upon the school district, because it is a factor of ours. A typical performance audit, which would range somewhere in the 2,000-hour range, which would be the equivalent of 3 or 4 months, would probably run in the $120,000 range. That's kind of our But when you're talking about doing taking a discrete performance audit and applying it here, you know, maybe best practices here and here and here and here, and taking the same general criteria maybe with some variations, you do gain some efficiencies that you can apply from one to one. But that'd be a fairly large audit, a 2,000-hour audit, a 2,500-hour audit.
But again, to clarify, under the Dash 1 amendments, the cost of that would not be borne directly by the district that you're auditing. That would be borne by the state through the state school fund. Indirectly, you spread that across the school district statewide, just the funding you're putting into this, but it's not a direct billing cost to the district that you're doing the audit.
Mr. Chair, that would be correct. It would. My understanding of the Dash 1 is it would come out of the school fund before distribution, as opposed to waiting until after distribution and billing directly to the agencies.
Okay. Anything else? Representative Bridger.
Mr. Chair, thank you. This might be more a question for Representative Haas, but I'd like to bring it up. I think one of the points that was made here is the credibility issue, and so I don't think it's a matter of one group of CPAs not being able to perform as well as another group coming from the state. I think all of you are qualified and able to do it. I think, I don't want to put words in my colleague's mouth, but I'm wondering if the choice of having the Secretary of State and perhaps in helping for the cost was because of the credibility issue and choosing that as a part of the public being able to better accept that type of audit. So,
okay. Do you want to respond?
Well, I think that's right. I think you got it right, Representative Berger. You know, Chairman Chenery went to the point that there is a larger and larger share of money spent from the state into K-12. The truth is, if the Portland School District or the Beaverton School District or Salem-Keizer were a state agency, it would be one of our largest state agencies. Mm-hmm. And I think that we do have a responsibility to take an independent performance audit of those kind of expenditures.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm.
The one thing that concerns me about this is that we had an audit recently done by the Secretary of State, and the audit didn't turn out that was the way that some people thought that it should, so they don't like the audit. And I would like to say that if the Secretary of State were to do an audit of school districts, that's the sign-off. It's done. That is the audit, in other words, and there's not another follow-up. Well, it didn't turn out the way I liked, so now we're going to go through the next process. You follow what I'm saying, Representative?
I know that there's a place for agencies to respond in a lot of your audits. And I know that there's not negotiations on the conclusions, but there's certainly conversations about how we can do better.
Right, Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, Representative Haas. We consider ourselves, especially on the performance side, as the independent auditors of frugality. So we take that responsibility very seriously. Everything that we put out in the public has the opportunity for the audited entity to respond. Also, everything that we put in our reports is supported. That's part of our standards. Every line in the audit report is directly supported by a piece of audit evidence and directly related. So when we reach a conclusion, it's based on sound evidence. We can always agree, I hope, always agree with the agency in terms of the facts. We may not always be able to agree on what it means, and that's where you may see some of the disagreement. But certainly in terms of the facts, that's something we certainly nail down and always give the agency an opportunity to respond to the audit findings and recommendations. It's only fair.
In one section, section 4 of the Dash 1 amendments, and again, we're all looking at this for the first time this morning, we've been talking about the Secretary of State's role in the audit. Section 4 expands the performance audit of schools to the purview of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee as well, so that it brings that aspect of it in. And I know that under separate legislation, JLAC has the authority to contract with private firms to conduct these performance audits of agencies, and I think has in the past at least parts of audits. Does the Secretary of State contract out parts of its performance audits as well, or whole performance audits? What's your history been on that?
Mr. Chair, we have undertaken to do that, the contracted audits of performance audit topics. With mixed results, so we prefer to do the significant work ourselves.
All right. Any other questions? Mr. Hopkins, did you have anything to add, or were you just here for...
Just here for support.
Support, okay. Well, you did a good job. All right, thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Let's bring up John Marshall and Mike Schofield. Talking about the Dash 1.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Marshall, representing the Oregon School Boards Association.
I'm Mike Schofield, business manager for Clackamas Education Service District.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to speak to the Dash 1 amendments. In thinking about my comments, I looked at the committee and I see four of you that have at one time served on a local school board. And I'm certain that I can speak for you when I say that in your service on the school board, when you made a policy decision relative to a program or service that you decided the school district would offer, I have no doubt that you wanted assurance that once that decision was made, that the resources that you decided to allocate to that program or service were going to be spent in the most efficient and economical way possible. That is, you wanted to make sure that in making that decision, you were going to get the biggest bang for the buck. And I'm also certain that you believed that you had a level of accountability to your public, and that part of that accountability was carried out by assuring that the professionals in your employ would carry out your mandate, so to speak, in delivering that program or service, and that you wanted some assurance that that was happening. So from the perspective of the folks I represent, I would say that we embrace accountability, and we want accountability. And I think the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2423 apparently try to get to that issue. The question, however, is that in assuring that there's some degree of accountability in terms of how school districts are spending their money, the fundamental questions are who's going to make that determination, how much is it going to cost, and who's going to pay for that? And it's in that context that we have some concerns with the Dash 1 amendments. First, to the cost. The bill proposes that $500,000 be taken out of the state school fund. Over the course of the next several weeks and months, you'll be looking at the state school fund distribution formula, and you'll be considering whether to make changes relative to the factors that send school districts money based on special education, factors for school districts that are experiencing rapid enrollment growth, declining enrollment, small schools and small school districts. And in fact, you'll even be considering whether or not to continue an allocation out of the state school fund to assist school districts with the placement of disabled students in out-of-state programs. So I'm concerned about the decision, well, we'll pay for this by just simply taking it out off the top of the state school fund, and maybe there won't be any impact, and I would argue that there will be. And if you decide to proceed down this road, we would hope that if this program is worthy, then a separate appropriation would be set aside to fund the Secretary of State and their activities. The second has to do with scope. Of these performance audits. Local boards in local school boards in making decisions about how to allocate resources make them for a variety of different purposes. Many of them are politically driven. A third party might come in and say, well, you could get bigger bang for the buck, school board, if you just close some schools or if you would eliminate some programs. And the school board would be resistant to that because they've made value judgments about how best to deliver educational services in their community in a political environment. And I'd hate to see a third-party auditor come in and second-guess value judgments that a local school board has made simply because, based on their judgment, it would be more efficient or economical to do things differently. Local school boards, after all, are elected, and there's a certain level of accountability they have to their own communities. So there's a concern about the sort of the scope of this audit and the extent to which those value judgments made by local boards are going to be second-guessed. Another issue is district time. I think the previous testimony indicated that for a single performance audit for a school district, it would take 2,000 hours. Now, I doubt very much if these auditors from the Secretary of State's office are going to come in and say, well, now you just leave us alone and we'll spend 2,000 hours here in the central office taking care of this audit. It's going to require staff time. Somebody's going to have to unlock the file drawer and point out where these invoices are kept or those records are kept. So the question is, at what cost will the school district be expected to provide staff time to pay for these auditors? Both the School Boards Association and, in fact, the School Business Officials Organization, as well as the School Administrators Organization, have conducted a number of management studies over the years. That is, a school district, for example, will want to know about its business office. And is our business office structure one that can maximize efficiency and economy? And a group of school business officials, for example, will go in and they'll look at the business office and make recommendations. So the idea of looking at efficiency and economy in school districts is not new. And one final comment, oftentimes when performance audits are conducted, and I'm thinking now particularly of state agencies, the audits division will go in, they'll come up with a whole list of recommendations, and then give the agency an opportunity to review those recommendations and comment. And oftentimes the draft of the audit report is modified based on that discussion. And I'm wondering whether the same kind of review and comment on the part of the school district will be made available in advance of some kind of a press release which appears in the local newspaper, which in effect says local school district wasting tens of millions of dollars according to the Secretary of State's audit. And I'm concerned about the implications in a community relative to that. Again, we're not afraid of accountability, and certainly performance audits can be of value in terms of giving school districts, both the board as well as the community, some sense that the money they're spending is being spent in an efficient and economical manner. The concerns, again, about who pays, who conducts these audits, and how much they cost are still concerned. I would hope that if you decide to proceed with the -1 amendments, that you may consider even allowing the advisory committee approach that was in the original bill to advise the Secretary of State on the scope. It would seem to me that the Secretary of State's audit division on a size of a school district like Portland or Beaverton or Salem-Keizer or Eugene or another large school district, if they went in without any kind of constraints on the scope, could easily spend in excess of $500,000. Many school districts have had third-party audits done of their transportation system or food service or delivery of special education programs. So hopefully these performance audits could be narrowed so that there would be a more intense focus on a particular aspect that could possibly take less time and cost less. So again, we would recommend that if this is a worthy prospect, that a separate appropriation be set aside and the state school fund not be further drained for this purpose, that consideration be given to allowing local auditors to do these performance audits by expanding the scope of those local audits, so perhaps maybe a one-shot deal with the financial audit as well as a performance audit more specifically defined could be of value. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll close and be glad to respond to any questions.
Questions for Mr. Marshall?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Thank you. I just want to clear up one thing so that we know that there's no misleading information on this. And maybe we can call up the auditors, but it's my experience with these audits that there is communication with the agency before the audit's complete. And, in fact, when the audit is publicly released, oftentimes that response from the agency is in there, so there isn't any of the surprise readings at headlines.
You want to clarify that, Mr. Hibner?
Can you repeat the question?
Oh, it was basically, I think it was Mr. Marshall's concern that a draft audit gets released in the press before the district has had an opportunity to respond, and so what the public sees is the first draft without the district's response that incorporates the communication that occurs back and forth before the draft, before the audit's final.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Hass, I would suspect, in fact, I'm almost certain that these audits would be performed under the generally accepted governmental auditing standards, which have specific reporting requirements that require us to have that dialogue with the auditee, which in this case would be the local school district, the same sort of process that we have with the agencies now, where we provide a draft, get their comments, make sure we understand their perspective, come up with workable recommendations, and make sure that those are in a form that's appropriate.
And that accurate. Process occurs before the audit
before
is released
released
to the public.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, thank you. Yeah, Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, if I could indulge. The other thing Mr. Marshall mentioned was the scope of these audits, and that's very appropriate because I did serve on the Salem-Keizer School Board, and we did go through a process of performance audits at the time and for our own district, and we went area by area. In other words, we didn't try and take the whole whale, if you will, and eat it, but have audits going through the throughout the district one at a time. What is your response, sir, to that question of, in a large district, one audit could eat up $500,000 pretty easily if you didn't narrow the scope?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, that could very easily be true. What we try to do in the planning process is to cull out the one or two issues that would be the most worthy of audit at a particular time, and that may be all you would do in the district at that particular moment, trying to get a broader coverage, and maybe even select, you know, our approach here recently has been to select the issues that seem to be able to be translated over a number of districts, again, trying to get the best value for any sort of recommendations we may make. We may find it in one district, but it may be applicable to a broader. So that's kind of the approach we've had to take here, since this is a new area for us. In terms of taking advice or an advisory council or whatever, we're always interested in getting feedback from what's important to the decision makers. So we would be more than happy to take any sort of input we could get. We would be a little concerned, though, not to be constrained by that, because oftentimes issues that do not seem particularly important to the advisory board may be particularly important to other decision makers in the state or the citizens. So we would certainly take them and consider them and want to provide as much good information as we can, but yet not be totally constrained to whatever did come out of a group like that.
Okay. Representative Virgin.
Just very quick. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Marshall also talked about closing schools, but if in the audit it looked like the closing of schools would be a way of being better managed, that doesn't mean that the school district has to close the schools. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, yeah, our recommendations are just that. I mean, we have no other power other than to recommend. We would certainly have an open dialogue with the district as to what is the reason. You know, we could certainly agree on the fact, again, that closing the school would save this amount of money. But the perspective or what that means may be open to debate. And we certainly would allow the perspective of the district to be heard and maybe, you know, to some extent reflected in the report, depending upon the situation.
And I could see, I guess, in the situation, John, going back to your question about, you know, the political decisions, where this is information that just could inform those political decisions. I mean, you've got on your audit the fact that it's inefficient to maintain this particular school site or particular building, but then the debate is had in the school board and among the community that, given that, there are community interest factors and history and culture and other things that just say, well, we understand that, but we're going to make a decision regardless what the numbers show, that there are other overriding considerations that say we're going to go ahead and keep this facility open or this program functioning. I don't think it dictates a particular result, but it informs the political discussion so that folks know what the scope is. Okay. You're shaking your head, yes, sir. I mean, yeah. Let's go on then. Mr. Schofield, welcome to the Revenue Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, representatives. I am currently a licensed CPA, and I am currently a licensed municipal auditor. I have audited schools for 15-plus years in Douglas County in a rural environment, and have served there at the Education Service District for 10 years. And I'm currently serving in Clackamas Education as a business manager, and I've served there for 5 years. I have a good view of what happens in rural Oregon, and I understand the difficulties and the diverse schools that we have in our state. I also understand some of the difficulties in the urban areas. I have given to you a chart, the two-page handout, first of which, as I was trying to prepare for this, I was just trying to get a handle on the different types of audits that we have in the state and those that are currently in place. First of all, you have the financial audits that have been discussed previously. All of those must be performed under the state minimum standards. And then you have program audits. Those are audits by Oregon Department of Education or the feds as they came in to determine eligibility and maybe poverty levels or different requirements of the grants. Secretary of State's audits under ORS 297-425, currently they are empowered to do audits, and so we would certainly invite them to join in the RFP or the request for proposal process that we currently engage in as we select auditors, and they could certainly make proposals to be considered for selection for those audits. There's been a lot of discussion about performance audits. Commonly, or in other places, they're known as service efforts and accomplishments. And I primarily am setting forth some of the things that those performance audits focus on. Excuse me. And then in parentheses, I've indicated what we're already doing in the state of Oregon for schools. As far as measuring student achievement, improvement in math and reading and attendance, we also provide district profiles of the schools. To give an example of the language barriers that we may suffer in some of the school, we may be challenged with, and those are all on the Oregon Department of Education website. As school business leaders, we spend a lot of time and effort to put those statistics up for the view of the public, and I have down in the resources box, I have given you the website so that you can go there and look for yourself, even about your local districts and what those measurements of accomplishment may be for your school. This is the second year that we have on that website, and so we at least have a two-year trend to measure by, and as time goes on, that measurement of our accomplishments will become better and better. There's also the Secretary of State performed a cost survey, which is on their website, and that reference is there also. But I would encourage you to read through that. It gives you a real taste of what's happening in Oregon, and it quickly narrows to some of the difficulties we have between the small and large school districts. In the state of Oregon, over half of our school districts have student populations of less than 1,000. And certainly that looks a lot different than a Beaverton or a Hillsboro or a Portland Public School. The last resource on the list is an example of service efforts and accomplishments that it's a report that is provided by the City of Portland. Their internal audit staff provides this report, and they primarily do citizen surveys about parks, transportation, the various things that are available. They do an excellent job. They have received national accolades for their work, and over time, the measurement and the focus of their service has improved because of that. Rest assured that I know that if we did citizen surveys with parents of school children, that the marks would be very, very high. And unfortunately, too many times we spend a lot of our time and effort working with people who may not have the interest in the schools or may not have children or grandchildren in schools. And so their interest is not the same as the parents who are intimately involved with the process. As you read the Secretary of State's cost survey, I think that you'll come to the on the second page. I've listed those under the title, "Please Read the Resources Provided." The benefits are high due to the PERS rates and the continual increase in medical and dental insurance. And secondly, the purchase services and supply categories are higher than national average simply because the Oregon schools are implementing technology in the classroom. They are ahead of many of the states in this effort. And to implement technology, there's a substantial investment in equipment, services, and supplies to accomplish that task. The third item is that the large school district geographic service areas in rural Oregon creates higher costs for student transportation, which is reflected in the report, and support services due to the long bus routes and the loss of economies of scale in a small school. And there are logical explanations for the variances already presented in that report, and rather than to start something new and launch out in performance audits, and certainly if there's an area that's needed, I would say yes, let's do it, because in the business offices in the schools, we too are very careful about our credibility to our local public and also to our state public audience that we serve. We have found that when someone has suspected a bad decision or has questioned it, it is very important for us to bring them close to the situation and explain all of the factors that brought us to the decision that we have made. And frequently, and almost always, they will understand and be sympathetic and understanding of the decision that was made. I also want to mention that the revenue stream for schools is generally predictable and stable, that 90%, I would guess, when I was auditing, about 90% of the revenues that was received in the school district was already confirmed by an outside agency. So it wasn't necessarily a situation that money was being rerouted or defalcations existed in the revenue stream. So generally, schools are seen as a very stable and low-risk audit client. County treasurers confirm the current and prior year's tax distributions to the school. ODE, Oregon Department of Education, sends a confirmation sheet containing all the school support fund payments and the grant payments that were paid to the district. The banks confirm the financial transactions and interest earned in monthly statements. The SD confirms common school, federal forest fees, and county school monies distributed to the districts. So primarily all of those revenues are confirmed before the auditors walk in the door. There's been some forced efficiencies under Measure 5 because of the $5 per $1,000 value of tax limitation that was placed on community colleges, education service districts, and schools by Measure 5, and then again by Measure 50 with a 3% assessed value limitation. Schools have been under a forced efficiency program for some time, and as you well know, that today is not any different than that, as school closures are happening as far as reducing days of education and instruction for the kids. I do want to share this with you that and plead with you that you take a look at what is already being done to measure the performance of schools. And I think you'll be pleased and that you'll be proud of the schools in the state of Oregon. I would feel very badly if a decision was made to divert any money from the school support fund to the purpose of performance audits that may not be necessary. And I'd be happy to respond to any questions you may have.
Questions for Mr. Schofield? Representative Barnhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's really more of a comment than a question. I notice a number of the things in your recommendations and observations refer to the relationship between Oregon and other states. And I just want to note that I've considered that, and I know you that this isn't a criticism of your comment by any means, but I know that we tend to compare ourselves to other states as a way of trying to sort of the underlying assumption being that other states must be doing okay in this area. And I don't believe that for a second. I think, in fact, Oregon does a much better job in education than the average state does, and that we should be doing the job that we need to do to educate our students, regardless of whether other states are doing it or not.
Okay. I want to be cognizant of the fact we've got a couple more witnesses here and then a bill after that. I don't want to shut the... We'll have further public hearing on this. We're not going to go to work session today. But thank you, gentlemen, for your testimony today. Let's bring up... is it Perry? Is it Ankerson and Doug Parham? Good morning.
Good morning.
I'll let you decide who goes first.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Doug Parham. I'm a certified public accountant and certified municipal auditor in the state of Oregon. Today I'm speaking representing myself, my firm, and the Oregon State Oregon Society of CPAs. I had come prepared to speak on the bill, 2423, and have listened intently to the testimony that's preceded, and would like to offer some comments maybe that apply to both the bill as well as the amendment that's been...
And you sure may, and I want to just explain maybe for those who don't follow the process on a daily basis, especially as we get into the opening weeks of the session, members put bill requests in outlining generally what they want the bill to look like, and legislative council then drafts it. Sometimes it looks like what the request was, and sometimes it doesn't. But at some, in the early weeks of the session, we don't have the time or opportunity to ask legislative counsel to revise the amendment before it comes out. So oftentimes we end up seeing bills that really aren't the bills that even the requesters asked for. So it's not an effort here to bait and switch or to fool anybody by setting one bill for a hearing and then all of a sudden finding out that we've got amendments to replace it. So I want to apologize for that because I know you prepared your testimony based on the bill.
Okay.
But we would be looking at the Dash 1 amendments now.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, those amendments were not finished until Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Please, with that.
Just to lay some groundwork, there's approximately 198 school districts in Oregon. There are 400 CPAs or thereabouts that are on the roster to conduct municipal audits in Oregon. That represents about 10% of all CPAs in Oregon. Based on that information, you can see that audits of school districts are a specialized service performed by a select few CPAs, specially licensed by the state, by the Board of Accountancy, to perform audits of municipal corporations in Oregon. We believe the current process works, and it is not broken. Districts periodically go through a process of selecting an auditor. They have the ability to select that, you know, as a financial audit. They also have the ability to, on special occasions, bring in that same auditor to do performance audits or to do specialized services that get at the heart of a specific matter. Public perception is skeptical of information shared by government. This perception is not something that is necessarily cured by an audit. Individual school district boards must strive to shape or share openly with their constituents, strive to inform the constituents, and set the tone from the top that establishes organizational integrity. The tone at the top sets in place the foundation for the development of internal controls that are simple and not burdensome, complete and not easily questioned, and fair. A district system of internal controls is the first line of defense against improper use of public funds. We believe that the audit is not the cure-all. Maybe there's money that can be spent at the front end of the process, establishing internal controls and best practices that lead to positive results. The CPAs who perform school district audits abide by a professional code of ethics, are specially trained to perform these audits, and strive to provide a service that also has value-added components. Testimony that's been offered earlier this morning brought several thoughts to my mind regarding the scope of these audits. We talked about financial audits. There's also a scope feature in most of the school district audits in Oregon that involves a single audit. That's audits of federal grant money. There's also the audit scope involving the minimum standards for Oregon. Those minimum standards are compliance areas that have been brought to the attention over the years. It's been modified over the years. Most recently, it was modified to get at a matter involving school district funding and caused the audit process to look deeper into attendance reporting by school districts and make sure that that attendance reporting was accurate, because that's what the funding is based on. There may be some modifications that need to be made in those minimum standards to address items that are pertinent to today's funding issues. I thought that Mr. Schofield outlined a wealth of information that is available to the legislative body that should be widely used by the legislature to see that school districts are performing. There's a report card out there on school district performance, and just make sure that you utilize the resources that you do have access to. And with that, I'd be welcome to answer any questions, or if you want to wait.
Okay, well, yeah, let's go ahead and Mr. Angerson's testimony, then we can ask questions of both of you. Mr. Angerson, good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. The initial bill is a clone of...
I'm sorry, if you could just give your name for the record.
Oh, excuse me, Perry Angerson, living like Oswego, Oregon. The original bill is a clone of a bill that's been in four separate sessions and never seen the light of day, and I seem to get the sense of this committee that we're not really talking about that at this point. I do urge you, and that's my written testimony, that urges you not to proceed with that particular one. You get no bang for your buck on that one. Okay, second bill, however, has some great merit to it. Performance audits, which are some things that are done by the Division of Audits, and they do them quite regularly, and they're also done by CPAs, are efficiency and effectiveness oriented, okay? And we would all want all of our organizations, statewide, any sort of organization, including my company and any organization you're associated with, to be run in an efficient and effective manner, and that tends to be the operative pieces of the government auditing standards, which are the only standards, really, that talk about what performance audits should be. Two sessions ago, I believe, and I could do some research and figure out what that bill was, there was a bill in front of the legislature requiring performance audits at the school district level, which did not pass. There's a very good reason that that did not pass, and the reason particularly was that figuring out what that scope was of those audits was very, very difficult. And one thing that was also mentioned in testimony here, who gets to be the subject, put in paren, victim of that particular audit. There are 197, 198 school districts in this particular state. Some of them have commissioned very extensive performance audits, including my client, Portland Public Schools, which is available to you, and I think you'd find some very interesting things going on. There's a couple things I think you as a legislature need to consider. Number one is the $500,000 every biennium. Where's that coming from? Well, arguably from school funds. This is, might not be exactly the right time to consider spending $500,000 from those funds when, arguably, school districts are doing much of that same work themselves. I don't want to turn down business. If you want to hire me to do performance audits, I am qualified to do that, as is Doug.
There'll be a sign-up sheet in the...
That's right. but one of the real issues is you hire me to do, pick a number, $100,000 performance audit, you better tell me what the scope is, because if you don't tell me what the scope is, and I only have $100,000, I can make a lot of money. Right now, I can give you millions of dollars worth of advice right now, which may not be politically palatable. 197 school districts. Think about it. Okay, that's millions of dollars of advice right now. Will it work? Maybe not. But performance audit can come up with those sorts of things. Closing schools, for instance, was mentioned as a great economy and efficiency measure at the school district level. Absolutely. There are schools in this state with tens of kids in them. Efficient, effective, no. Politically appropriate for that particular environment, maybe at the state level we maybe not want to make those kind of choices for those folks. So I think as you contemplate this particular bill, number one, think of what the scope is going to be. Number two, think about the funding and whether this is the appropriate time to have the funding from that particular source. And number three, think about whether or not the school boards themselves, which do manage and the administration of those school districts, are in fact doing much of what you'd like to get done. Yes, I realize the legislature, through the wisdom of the people in Measure 5, is particularly providing the bulk of the funding to school districts. Is that where we want it managed? I think that's a question that maybe we ought to think about. So after thinking about the original bill and now the revised bill, if there are any questions or comments that I could help as an auditor or as somebody espousing their firm's views, I'd be more than pleased.
Okay, questions for either of these? I guess my only comment or question would be on the funding side, and I realize that's a tough issue. Is this a good time? I guess, though, unless you assume that the $500,000 is money down a rat hole, you could also say, was there a better time to invest some money in trying to extend the resources that we are currently distributing to schools and maximize the benefit of those? So I think that question goes both ways.
Certainly, that's the economic. Yeah. Is there a 6-time multiplier? With every audit and every time the State Division of Audits does a performance audit. I can't tell you. They can't really tell you.
Yeah.
It's a bet. It's, go to Las Vegas. You can maybe make your $500,000 a little more. You might not.
I think it's
not quite that way. I might be overstating.
I hope so.
Yeah. I think it's important to take a look at the process and decide where to spend that money.
Sure.
Do you spend it? An audit, whether it be a financial audit or a performance audit, is looking at transactions after the fact, or do you spend it at the front end of the process in the form of education? That debate comes about in this building many times as you weigh education versus corrections.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, both of you, for coming down today. Ms. Hartwig, I have you signed up on this bill and the next one. Did you intend to testify on both? Okay, then come on up. You're on House Bill 2423. You're our last witness on this bill. Ozzie, Rose, did you want to come up?
Yeah.
Why don't you come up and have a seat with Ms. Hartwig here, and we'll catch you both. We've got some folks from Glendale here that we want to make sure we get heard this morning as well.
I'm going to digress slightly from my...
I'm sorry, if you could introduce yourself.
Oh, Delma Hartwig from Lincoln County, Harlan. I spent most of my life in the business area, but unfortunately, I am not very well educated in the profession of audits. And I really learned a lot this morning. I thought you had some really great people here. But what I'm looking at is that rather than take over some of the auditing performances that are being done now, very well, by the way, by the auditors we have in place, because they're given a certain parameter. They're given this job that says, we want you to do this and this and this and this, and they give them the information. But in some cases, that isn't quite enough, because you probably heard about the controversy in Lincoln County. We got rid of our school board, mainly because they were not spending the money the way they should be. They were giving the administrators an average of $12,000 a year raises. They closed the school that my grandchild goes to. Thought they were going to save money. It ended up they didn't, because we're homeschooling. And our children are not furnishing the money that they thought they would get. The main reason for it is that they didn't even consider the fact that our graduates are entitled to have a grant from a family out in our area that would pay for all 4 years of college. And when I approached the president of the school board and said, you're hurting our children, he said, well, that's just tough. Children get hurt all the time. And needless to say, I was a little bit hot. But anyway... What we need out there, because there is a discrepancy in the money that has been reported by the state of Oregon and is being listed by the county, there's a $2 million discrepancy. And people have been very angry for years and years and years because we do not have accountability from the district. What we need is a very in-depth audit. And rather than take over this business of what the schools are doing now, think about letting the Secretary of State oversee some of these problems. And if there is a request from many people in a district, we have had over 1,200 signatures on one petition asking for an in-depth audit. And when I was in the university years ago, we had one of these audits. There was a controversy between our school because we got the land that the University of California wanted. And so they demanded that there be an audit because they said there must be something wrong here if they're going to run that school on the little bit of amount of money they have. So they came in one day, unannounced. They wanted to see every piece of paper, every receipt, every bank statement, everything that we had. And they went over with a fine-tooth comb. And we didn't have anything the matter with us, so we passed. But if this was done in a case like ours, where they looked at every piece of paper, every receipt, et cetera, they'd find that money. And that's what we need to have coming from the state. We have filed with the Attorney General. We have also a file with the local district attorney, and nothing is being done. And I really think that as a body overlooking the financial structure of the state, it should be perhaps your responsibility to help us solve this problem, not just in Lincoln County. I'm sure there's other places. But we need something over and above the audits that we have rather than going into the school district. And some way that we can get an in-depth audit like they do in the banks or like they did at our university. I have a son-in-law who's the manager of a large bank in San Francisco, and he said when the auditors come in there, the papers fly, and they look at everything. And that's what we need. So I hope you'll consider that, and thank you very much.
Thank you for coming over to join us, Ms. Hartley, this morning. Any questions for her? Ozzie Rose.
Mr. Chairman, that's going to be, for the record, I'm Ozzie Rose with the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, and my apologies for not signing up. I was not aware of the amendments when I came in this morning. I'd encourage you to look at a couple, three things as you think about the performance audits issue. First of all, the issues around the performance audits, as John Marshall pointed out, a lot of them are value judgments made locally. Second of all, the amount of money invested, the $500,000 that's currently in the bill, the Secretary of State said one of two things. Either that's four auditors for 2 years, or they could do four audits that would cost up to $120,000. And so you're not going to audit very many districts in that time process. It's going to be a hit and run and hit four others the next biennium. And a third point I'd like to point out is that 85% of the money the districts are spending is going to salaries and benefits. Another significant portion of the other 15 is going for supplies and for maintenance and repair on buildings. There's very little money that falls in the category, the kinds of things that turned up in the lottery audit. I would submit to you that the return on the audit doesn't justify the involvement of the state in this process. And I'm more concerned about the state involved in the process. We have a locally run school system, and that's the heart or the backbone or the heart of our public education system. And the move from local to state funding has cut into that, and I'm aware of that, and we're all aware of that. But even that discussion, prior to the 1990s, the state produced about 23 to 25% of the local or the money for schools. Now we do 43. Yes, it's more, but does it justify the state of Oregon becoming the school board for all local school boards? And an audit, a performance audit, closing of schools is one big. There are a lot of schools that should be closed, could be closed, strictly on a financial and efficiency basis. No doubt about that. And you're already, we've got bills in to do that or prevent us from doing that. You're aware of some of that. The issue in Lincoln County is partly over a school that was closed. the bus routes, contracting out local lunch programs, all of that could be done differently and maybe more efficiently cost-wise. But it's a community decision on whether those things fit. Class size, curriculum, et cetera, those are issues that I don't believe that, notwithstanding the that you can have well-trained folks from the state level, I don't think they're prepared and would contribute well to the local debate about what people want for their schools. And the auditor suggested that there's a 6-to-1 return on this effort. $500,000 gets you $3 million bucks over biennium. That's $3 million out of $7 billion. And I don't believe that that's a return that justifies the one more step toward you becoming the school board of Oregon. And I don't think you want to be the school board of Oregon. And I believe that most school districts, if not all, know that first-class airfare and a variety of things that turn up and make the press aren't appropriate, and they are not done, and or if they are done, they're caught by local auditors and they're stopped. And I submit to you that you don't need to move any further into running Oregon schools than you already have. And I'd suggest that you take this a long look at this before you go any further.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Representative Bates, did you come in to testify on this audit bill? Thank you. Then I will close the public hearing. Representative Barnhart.
Before we do close,
yeah.
Could I ask if this bill has a sunset provision in it?
I don't think it does.
I wonder, especially given the last testimony, if we might not want to consider that as a possibility, so it would come up for further review.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2423, and as we're transitioning to House Bill 2394, and while we have a quorum, because we may go over our time today, let me briefly, just by LC number, committee, let's shift to bill introduction. We have before us LC 1225, 2374, 2375, 2567, and 2848 as committee bills, that is, without an identified requester. Chair would move introduction of those LCs as committee bills, again, understanding that introduction is a committee bill, does not indicate support or opposition by the members of the committee to the bill that would ultimately come forward. Is there any discussion, any objection to the introduction of LC 1225, 2374, 2375, 2567, and 2848? Hearing none, those bills are entered. We also had before us LC 2853 at the request of Lane County Commissioner Bill Dwyer. Chair would move introduction of House Bill 2853 at the request of Lane County Commissioner Bill Dwyer. Again, with the same caveat as to what that means for committee members and the bill. Is there any discussion, any objection? Hearing none, LC 2853 is introduced. All right, let's go open the public hearing then on House Bill 2394 and invite up Dr. Metke and your students who have joined us today from Glendale. I hope that $20 isn't a prize. You can't be bribing the committee members. good morning. Before we get you started, let me ask Steve if you want to give us the brief rundown, or do you want to let our witnesses kind of give us the summary? Okay. Then, please, if you would, introduce yourselves, tell us who you are, and then we'll let you decide among yourselves who goes first.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Candace Allen. I'm senior class president at Glendale High School.
I'm Daniel Ashby. I'm the social chairman at Glendale High School.
Good morning, social chair. My name is Chalamet Aranis. I am the parliamentarian at Glendale High School.
Well, good morning. Glad you could join us today.
Two years ago, Superior Lumber Company, that it happens to be in Glendale, Oregon, got vandalized by the Earth Liberation Front and got burnt pretty bad. They had to tear it down and start all over. After they rebuilt, they looked at the timber revenue and realized that all the dollars weren't being placed where they should have been. They gotten together with some other people and
like Eastern Oregon, they look at their transportation, and in Portland, they look at their special education. In our community, complaining about a problem is not the solution. Taking action is the solution. So here to present a House bill. House Bill 2394 is our superintendent, Dr. Mackey, Shiloh Manzaranis, and our next speaker, Daniel Ashby.
Okay, good morning.
Take a deep breath. It's okay.
This is my biggest fear. Since the beginning of this school year, Dr. Mackey has come to our class and taught us about how they put bills together, and we've had the opportunity to come to Salem and be involved with this hands-on experience, and we've met people like Cindy Hunt, and she's taught us a lot about all this stuff, and it's very interesting to us. Well, me. So Dr. Mackey wanted me to read a part of the House Bill 2394 that he thought was important, so I'm going to read that out. The legislature, through appropriate committee, should review the current state school funding distribution formula in light of new information and current statewide policy goals, excellence, equity, stability, and accountability. Require all school districts to use accurate accounting systems. Change the school funding allocation process to better account for school size, regional distinctions, and performance standards. One such action plan to begin this is spelled out in House Bill 2394. And Dr. Mackey would like me to inform you that if you guys would like to come to Wolf Creek, because they have a national historical landmark, and it's their hotel, and he said that he would pay for it. You guys could come down and go over this and possibly have our class come out and see exactly what it's like when you guys go over these sort of things. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Shiloh Manzaranis once again. In our government class at Glendale, we learned that life in a democratic society is like a two-sided coin. For example, freedom versus responsibility, or order versus chaos, the coin will balance the two. In an effort to resolve the school crisis, we present to you House Bill 2394. We feel that House Bill 2394 can be likened to a two-sided coin. On one side, you have how to generate revenue, and on the other side, you have how to improve accountability and quality of our schools. House Bill 2394 addresses one side of the coin, how to improve accountability and quality of our schools. We feel that we also need to concentrate and work on the other side as well. We had to wait for former Senator Hanby to return from her trip to Fiji to establish this concept. I personally had the honor of meeting former Governor Atiyeh 3 months ago when I visited the Capitol with our government class. He also has had input on this concept. Today we'd like to ask a large favor of you to submit this paper to your legal counsel to prepare it in its proper format, and then we feel we could take it from there. Yesterday's newspaper featured an editorial on Governor Kulongowski in which he states he believes there's a grassroots movement building for a school funding solution. He stated, "I encourage it. I want to be part of it." Someone has to lead this movement. The governor has made it clear it won't be him. We would like to accept responsibility and take a leadership role. And the grassroots movement will only succeed if attached to our bill, for you must have both sides of the coin. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you three coming up today. Are you up to spend the day at the Capitol, or are you heading back to catch your afternoon classes?
We'll be here.
Oh, you don't need to say that on the record. It's okay. Brian Mitke, please join us.
Paul, can we start this now on the screen, please? Thank you. Well, we lost our picture.
Okay. Yeah, I think we could dim the lights and help see the screen better.
Okay.
Well, good morning. I'm Brian Metke from Glendale School District. I've been an educator in Oregon for 32 years. And you are definitely in for a Christmas surprise treat this morning. You need to know that I kind of feel I have three children. It's like you wrap presents all fall, and in 30 minutes, they're going to rip all those packages open. Now, I have a set of slides that's probably 50 slides long. I'll be lucky if I can get through the first dozen. But I want you to know that I have the backup support, the backup information, that when this goes to a Cindy Hunt work session to go through the guts and the details of this bill, I have the backup material to support this proposal. I'd also like you to consider I'm going to offer you four packages. And when I open each one of these packages, this is the Chinese box surprise that your kids pull on each other, that when you're shaking this gift, you think that this is your gift, and when you open that present, all of a sudden there's another present inside and it goes to someone else. So I know that many of these boxes should be more properly discussed at, say, the Education Committee or the Education Department, but we do have one aspect of this bill that concerns the Revenue Committee. Because we are proposing, as a transition bill, to replace our existing funding formula for schools, to reactivate the equalization boards. So any such bill that is connected with the Revenue Committee needs to originate here. And I would fully expect, after I give this summary, that in your caucuses and in your analyzing the merits and the direction of this bill, make those recommendations accordingly. John Dewey, one of the 50 foremost thinkers of humankind, said that an educated person was one who could entertain themselves, entertain a complete stranger, and entertain a new idea. I do my reflections at my grandfather's cabin at Camp Sherman or on a boat up in the Puget Sound. You need reflection. And after you hear this proposal, I'm asking that you go back and reflect on the concept of developing the finest educational model in this country. Secondly, I know to half of you I am a stranger. To half of you I am not. Because Glendale took the initiative to host summits in all areas of the state, including complete bipartisan discussion, I thoroughly enjoyed observing Representative Barnhart duke it out verbally with Ted Ferrioli or Representative Hobson analyzing how to improve education with who I call Uncle Vern Duncan. This is important because if you go to factions such as OSBA or COSA or the unions, and I've been to all of them, you go to, I'll pick Chris Dudley. Chris Dudley, I thoroughly admire as director of OSBA. Chris will look at you in the eye and say, now, Brian, I don't want you to tell anybody that I support this bill. that if you're heading in this direction, dot, 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 because he is compelled as a director to support the platform of OSBA. But I want this committee to know in 2 years I have been to Tigard, I've been to the OEA, I've been to all the unions, and I have collected their best input. I am meeting again with COSA tomorrow morning. I have a scheduled appointment Wednesday morning with Ed Dennis and Superintendent Castillo on Wednesday. I'm meeting with Ron Saxton in Portland. We have an issue to deal with in Portland tomorrow afternoon. And once we get some more feedback, we need to begin approaching the governor. So what are we talking about here? What does this bill do? This bill is the most significant bill since the 21st century legislation of 12 years ago. How do I know that? Because I was on town hall with Vera Katz live debating the merits of the 21st century legislation. And I was the one that raised my hand and squeaked out that there is wealth in this state. It's how it is distributed is the key question. It's good to have 21st century goals that everyone will read math, da-di-da-di-da, by the year 2000. But if you do not have the systemic system to implement it, it is all wishful talk. This bill includes the system to get there. I was on town hall because I was representing, and still to this time, the only two-time blue ribbon school in Oregon. John Dewey said there is an intimate relationship between schooling and democracy and the citizenry. This picture that you are looking at is a picture of Glendale High School. When I arrived there 6 years ago, the facilities were dilapidated. My first recommendation to the board, we need to put out a bond levy. They all looked at me with blank stares. There hadn't been a bond levy passed in this community for 30 years. We put up a bond levy. We got creamed 3-1. We then felt, well, we didn't do it right. We've got to go to conferences, to bonds and ballots workshops, and learn how to do this. We put the vote up again. We got smeared 2-1. Finally, and I'm the newcomer to the group, I believe in the Steens Mountain Mustang, you don't stand out in front of a herd and get run over. You kind of work your way into the herd and move to the front, and then you turn the herd. I raised my hand. I said, okay, we've had two defeats. Can we try it my way this time? And when I say my way, it's really not Brian Metke's way. I'd like you to observe the figure in front of me. This is the mystery personality with Chairman Shetterly said that there's a $20 bill there to bribe you. Because anyone that recognizes this figure gets the $20 bill. This man was a student of John Dewey. He is the only educational leader in Oregon having two schools named after him. When this institution, the Speaker of the House, Bob Smith, when teacher standards and practices were formed, he is the only person waived from all credentials. Indeed, the honor recommended that Portland State, University of Oregon, and Lewis and Clark schedule a class on the educational value system of this man. while in class back in Chicago, someone asked John Dewey the question, which state of the Union best represents his pragmatic progressive philosophy? His response was West Virginia. There's something about the upper Appalachians. Minnesota. There's something about those lakes up there. And Oregon. There's something about those trees in Oregon. And if you had the opportunity to listen to Russell Sadler a week ago Sunday, he noted that the legislature wasn't going to solve this problem. It wasn't going to be COSA and the OSBA and the factions. It was going to take someone that focused on the Oregon values. Now, was that Brian Metke? No. How do I know that? Because I had breakfast with Russell Sadler Saturday morning last. We reminisced over the governors. We reminisced over the great educators. This is the man who packed his bags from North Dakota and headed for Oregon. I happen to represent his district back in Washington, D.C. as a recipient of the Blue Ribbon Honor. When I got off the plane, two professors from Harvard greeted me. Cal Moseley, Gail Merceth. They believe they were the only professors at Harvard that graduated from the same high school, and it was this man's school. If you were to talk to Norma Paulus, she will tell you that this man had a talented and gifted program. He would call her into his office, give her a stack of books. She would come back the next week, and he would test her. He called every sixth grade student into his office to read orally aloud before he would sign off for them to go to the junior high school. Now, this man had some quirks. He believed every administrator should teach, and that that teachers should be given more administrative responsibility. And if you didn't read up to his standard, you had to attend his class. Now, it took three tries, which passed by seven votes, only because we raised our hand to the Glendale community and said, if you pass this levy, you will have the finest looking school in the country. Not that we're just repairing or filling the cracks. If you vote for this, you will have the finest looking school in the country. It passed by seven votes. That is the cover of a national school publication. We pull people in. What do you want the school to look like? Did I know there was going to be a pirate ship or cannons or wenches on the front of the school? No. But in the democratic process, if you make the connection between excellence and funding, Glendale is the second poorest town in Oregon. I am here to remind everyone that even the poorest community will support you if they know you will absolutely get the finest product. Here we go. This is the summary statement of the bill. I'm just going to make comments on each line so you know what this package entails.
Hey, Brian, just so I'm keeping our time under control here, we can plan on finishing you up about a quarter till.
Sure.
I want to leave time for Ms. Hartwig because she came over from Lincoln County, and then we also have Ruth Shepherd. Are you still in the room? Is that okay? Who wants to speak on revenue options? So we'll do it. Floor at 11, so I want to make sure I'll give you until quarter till, and then we'll take this. And if other committee members need to leave, I'll apologize to our folks. We are running overtime today, but we will continue in hearing and keep the record open. So go ahead.
Okay. First of all, I don't see Mary quite contrarily Nolan up here. She must be on the Education Committee. But she's the one with the pencil that, you know, what's the timeline? Who's going to do this? When's it going to happen? What are the due dates? What are the benchmarks? John Dewey would love her. Notice, this is something for the future. I'm here to say that the present school funding formula, you need to continue to implement just as you've been doing. This is a transition bill. And we're not hung up if that is changed to 06 or 07, or if this committee believes we need to form a task force and get our ducks in line. So there is a time factor here. This is what Russell Sadler was talking about, Measure 5. Unfortunately, the past 12 years, all we have focused in is the monetary side of this bill. There is a quality side to this bill. It has to do with a democratic relationship between school boards. I am arguing that the most significant event that happened when Measure 5 was passed was not about dollars. It was about the local control and the sovereignty of our local school board. We have lost the three constitutional functions of those local school boards, where they raised the money, they dictated the program, and they were held accountable for it. This is the income level of the communities. Notice that the colors fit the same as Measure 5. We have great disparity on income levels in the distribution of dollars in this state. These are the Oregon Enterprise Zones. The dot is where Glendale is located. It is a federal enterprise zone. We have a bus run that goes to Wolf Creek. 40% of these students are identified as homeless. We have an urban enterprise zone in Portland. I attended the Portland School Board and basically invited them that if we could solve this problem for Portland and Glendale, all the rest of the schools in Oregon would fall in line. And I believe that. This shows the funding flow, which makes us consider that perhaps this isn't a question of dollars. It's a problem of a delivery system. These charts are out of the Oregon Atlas that you should have in your office. This shows all the unification that has taken place. When you hear that if we just unify that this is going to solve this problem, I'm sorry. You've unified to death. The present funding formula is ADM driven. 63% of our districts are losing students. That means that right now, whatever you do, those districts are hurting, because the model is not reaching out to all schools. I was part of the database project 5 years ago, and the database project only implemented the quantitative side of the recommendations, getting all the schools on a chart of accounts. The six recommendations on the qualitative side were completely ignored. We have 41, here's Glendale, we have 41 cash districts in Oregon. We need to get all of the districts on the same accounting system. Incentive rewards. In your packet, you will have a list of the past Blue Ribbon schools of Oregon. We have not honored a school since 1991. We are the only state to not make recommendations in honoring our schools. You show me a town that no longer holds their Chamber of Commerce banquet to honor their citizens, and I'll show you a dead community. I mean, even the Oscars know better. We have in law a quality ed commission, and you have in your packet a chart that looks like this, We have identified every school in Oregon. We have identified them by congressional district and by size. Now, if you look at the column of the secondary school where it says 1,000 plus, we have a template for a quality ed school funding for a school the size of 1,000. I want you to notice that they're pretty evenly distributed throughout the state. In fact, they total 88 schools. The Quality Ed Commission then interpolated that material for the funding for all the other schools. I'd like you to consider a school model based on blue ribbon templates that are taken from this research. Oops, I need to back up. Notice that the key words of this bill are in blue. Directs Quality Education Commission to develop education prototype models for public schools based on research and best practices. Not just what a typical school looks like in mediocrity. I'm talking the finest 2% of the schools in the country that are profiled by research. Three quick examples, and I have time for this. Here is John Bowne School, 3,700 students in New York, $15 million, has all the bells and whistles, international baccalaureate programs. They pay 600 students in the summer for their summer experience in research papers, sending these kids to Europe. I'm talking about the finest urban model in the country. I would love to have South Eugene, South Medford, South Salem, Roosevelt High School in Portland sit down and analyze this model. Here's how it would work. I teach history. We have a textbook commission. I look at my list. They go, Brian, here's a list of approved textbooks to teach government or to teach history. I'd like South Eugene, South Medford, South Salem to have a list from the Quality Ed Commission that these are the 8 prototype models of the finest schools in this country, and we'd like you to go back to your staff and have a conversation with them and pick one of these models. And you go to your equalization board and you say, we'd like to pick this model. How about Dr. Doolittle Elementary? 100 students located in Indiana. When you register at this school, you not only register your name, you register your pet. And if you don't have a pet, they give you a pet rock. And they give you 1 week to go to the back of the school and pick out of the litter or the livestock or the reptile, and their whole curriculum is generated on responsibility, on caring for, and even teaching your pet. It becomes the whole culture of your school. The question here is not size. It is a respect for each and every school in Oregon. You have a blue ribbon list in your packet of the past blue ribbon schools in Oregon. And at the bottom, it has been commonly noted that schools honored represent the full diversity of American education. They exist in urban, suburban, small town, and rural communities. This idea that one size fits all is nonsense. We need to project a system that Oregonians are not going to be satisfied until we have the finest blue ribbon school in every community in Oregon. And we can do that.
I'm just wondering, Brian, we'll have to come back to this. Do you want to stay, wait there? Because I think you're just about to get into the technical aspect of the bill. Do you want to wait until we have this back up and let you pick up from that point on?
I would only say that our mystery man is Mr. Henry Slater from Burns, Oregon. When Congressman Smith gave his eulogy, stated that he was 50 for 50 in levies, bond levies, etc., because he ensured that every student either had a job, got married, or was in college. And he followed through. So thank you.
Thank you. All right. We will have you back, and I know that you'll be back.
Cindy Hunt is our ticket.
Okay. Let me bring back up Ms. Hartwig, and I appreciate you staying around, Ms. Hartwig, for this. I'm glad we happened to schedule two bills in one day that you wanted to testify on so that we maximized your time here in the building, too. And for any for committee's information, Ms. Shepard, who I said was here to testify on revenue options, passed me a note and said she will be pleased to come back at 3 o'clock. So we'll hear her at 3 o'clock. Ms. Hartwig, welcome back.
Thank you so much for staying. I really appreciate it. I'm not into outcome-based education. I'll say that right up front. For many years, it's been a major concern of the Oregon legislature to improve the school systems in Oregon. To anyone who cares, it's an admirable goal. The first major step in this direction was what was to become known as the Katz Bill. It sounded like the best thing since sliced bread, and most of those in the legislature endorsed it. Unfortunately, instead of accomplishing the goals it was touted to reach, it has been an abysmal failure. And by the way, the SAT tests have gone down with the Katz bill, not up. There are several bills in the pipeline during this session to resolve some of the problems it created. H. Bill 2394 has all the earmarks of further hamstringing our already beleaguered schools. This bill will take control of all state funds, timber tax receipts, and all federal money received for various purposes out of the hands of local school boards and elected officials. The board will not have the authority to control property taxes. However, in some cases, they will be able to deduct the amount of local taxes received from the money supplied by the school fund. The board will decide what kind of schools meet their approval, whether we agree or not. And the board will even decide whether or not a child can ride the school bus. If you look in the bill, it says that if they are an elementary school child, they have to live within a, or over a mile away. Try that on Highway 20. If you want to see some children killed, just try that on Highway 20. This is abomination. Oh, yes, and the board will be appointed by the superintendent of schools instead of being selected by people who live in the district. Obviously, we're headed in the wrong direction. When I was a young child, there was a European country whose schools were so outstanding, people from all over the world competed to attend them. Some wealthy families even sent their children to boarding schools in that country in order to have their children receive a superior education. Then a leader came into power who wanted to put all schools under a central power to improve them. He envisioned an ideal system which would produce citizens with proper attitudes, fit bodies, and the ability to do the jobs necessary to preserve a new national state. When asked what if people objected, he answered, "When an opponent declares, 'I will not come over to your side,' I calmly say, 'Your child belongs to us already. What are you? You will pass on.'" Adolf Hitler, November 6, 1933. Is that what you want for our children? A dictatorship instead of local control of our children's education? We need to turn things around, not create another costly bureaucracy. Please think about it, and thank you.
Well, Ms. Hartwig, you didn't complete the witness registration sheet, but I have put you in opposition, marking your position.
Right.
Okay, I just want to make sure, make clear what your position was on House Bill 2394. Questions for Ms. Hartwig? All right, thank you again for
coming in.
And again, for the students from Glendale, we welcome you to the building today. Dr. Reeder, we'll see you again. And with that, folks, we've got four sessions in 10 minutes. We are, do I recess or adjourn? We'll reconvene in joint session at 3 o'clock as a joint House and Revenue Committee meeting, and again at 6 o'clock tonight. So hope you enjoy these new chairs, folks. All right.